Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a fascinating journey, back in time really, exploring the religious landscape of Kurdistan before the arrival of Islam.
It's quite a topic.
Yeah, you've shared some incredible sources, and our aim today is to, well, unpack this rich history for you, make it thorough, but still engaging, you know, without getting lost in too much detail.
Absolutely. And I think the first thing that really jumps out from the sources is that we're not talking about one single unified pre-Islamic Kurdish religion. It's just not that simple.
Okay.
Instead, what we see is more like a vibrant religious mosaic. That's the term that really seems to fit.
A mosaic. I like that.
Yeah, because this region, right in the Fertile Crescent, it's been a melting pot for, well, thousands of years. Civilizations, beliefs, they all mingled there.
You mentioned Mount Judy.
Right, Mount Judy. It's significant in both Jewish and Islamic lore as supposedly where Noah's Ark landed.
Wow.
That one landmark, it just highlights the incredible depths, the layers of history we're digging into here.
Definitely. And as we get into this, it's probably important for everyone listening to remember that the term Kurd itself, it's a bit complex for this pre-Islamic era, isn't it?
It really is. You see mentions of groups like the Guti in ancient Mesopotamian texts, and then Xenophon talks about the Kardushoi around 400 BCE.
Right.
But whether there's a direct, unbroken line to the Kurds we know today, well, that's debated among scholars.
So the name Kurd, as an ethnonym, it comes later, more around the time Islam arrives.
That seems to be the consensus, yeah. Around the 7th century CE, during Islamization, there's even this linguistic idea that maybe the word comes from a Middle Persian term, Kurt, possibly meaning something like nomads or tent dwellers.
Mm-hmm.
And that term might have gradually become associated with the tribes in that region after the Islamic conquest.
Okay, so this deep dive isn't about finding one specific Kurdish religion from way back then.
Exactly. It's more about understanding the foundational religious layers, the beliefs, the practices of the people who lived there, who would eventually, you know, form the Kurdish identity we recognize later.
Got it. So our mission then is to explore these foundational layers, the cultural bedrock before Islam became dominant, and really appreciate just how complex and diverse it all was.
And we should probably mention the challenges up front, right?
Yeah.
Piecing this together isn't easy.
Because the sources are...
Yeah.
What? Patchy?
Yeah, fragmented is a good word. We often rely on accounts from outsiders like Greeks or Romans or Persians or records from the big imperial religions of the time.
Okay.
And then for some faiths like Yazidism or Yarsinism, so much was passed down orally for centuries.
So not always written down immediately.
Exactly. Plus you have this huge factor of syncretism.
Ah, the blending of beliefs. You mentioned that.
Yeah, it's crucial here. You see faiths later on that clearly blend ancient Iranian ideas, indigenous beliefs, bits from Abrahamic traditions, even Sufi mysticism from Islam later on.
It's like a mix and match over centuries.
It really is. And the sources you provided reflect that academic studies, community voices, journalism, online discussions, it's a real mix, mirroring the complexity of the topic itself.
Okay, great foundation. So where should we start this exploration? Maybe with those ancient Iranian religions. Zoroastrianism comes up a lot.
Definitely. That seems like the logical place to begin. Given Kurdistan's geography, smack bang in the Iranian cultural sphere, Zoroastrianism looks like it was a major player, maybe even dominant before Islam.
Because it was the official religion of those big empires, right?
Yeah.
The Medes, Achaemenids.
Exactly. The Medes, who were often linked ancestrally to the Kurds, the Achaemenids, Parthians, and especially the Sasanians, they all held sway over the region at different times, and Zoroastrianism was their state religion.
So it stands to reason it was widespread.
Right. Some sources even suggest most Kurds under the later Sasanian Empire were actually Zoroastrian.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
So for people listening, what are the basics? What did Zoroastrians believe?
Okay, so at its heart, it's monotheistic. Worship of Ahura Mazda, the wise lord, the creator of all good things.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have this really key idea of cosmic dualism, this constant struggle between good, Spentamenu, and evil, Angermenu.
Light versus darkness, essentially.
Pretty much. And crucially, humans have free will to choose which side they're on. That's a big emphasis.
So a strong focus on ethics and personal choice.
Absolutely. And you see ideas that pop up later in Judaism, Christianity, Islam, like a messiah figure, heaven and hell, final judgment.
Interesting parallels.
Yeah. And fire is sacred. It represents purity, the light of Ahura Mazda. That's why fire temples are central. And the core ethical guideline is just beautifully simple. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds.
That's powerful. It sounds like a system that values personal integrity highly.
Very much so. And some argue you can still see echoes of that emphasis on individual ethics in Kurdish culture today.
And we actually have physical proof of Zoroastrianism in Kurdistan.
Mm.
Right? You mentioned that miniature Avesta.
Yes, that's such a cool find. A 2,000-year-old miniature version of the Avesta, their holy book written in the Harami dialect, found right there.
Wow, that really brings it home.
It does. It grounds it locally, shows the deep roots.
Beyond the theology, it sounds like its influence was cultural too. Nowruz, the Kurdish New Year, seems deeply connected.
Oh, absolutely. Nowruz is huge. It's a spring festival symbolizing renewal, light overcoming darkness. And it's tied directly to that famous Kurdish myth of Kawa the blacksmith defeating the tyrant Zahak.
A story of liberation.
Exactly. Themes of renewal, resistance. It resonates deeply in Kurdish identity. And scholars also point to possible Zoroastrian influences on later faiths like Yazidism and Yarsinism, maybe even some Sufi orders.
So echoes carrying forward. You also mentioned Mazdayasna. Is that like an older version?
Sort of. Mazdayasna means worship of wisdom. Some see it as maybe a broader, older Iranian religious tradition that existed before Zoroaster himself.
The Zoroaster was maybe a reformer of this older system.
That's one way to look at it. Think of Mazdayasna as maybe the umbrella term for this ancient Aronian focus on wisdom, and Zoroaster refined or completed it. It just shows the depth again.
And fascinatingly, some Kurds today are actually reviving Zoroastrianism.
Yes, that's a really interesting modern development. Some see it as connecting back to an ancient identity, maybe predating Islam, tied to national feelings.
A reclaiming of heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So what led to its decline then? Obviously, Islam arrives.
That's the main turning point, yes. The Arab-Muslim conquests in the 7th century, the fall of the Sasanian Empire, it changed everything. Conversion was gradual, took centuries.
Was it peaceful or forced?
Likely a mix. Some probably converted willingly for various reasons, but there were definitely periods of pressure, sometimes outright violence against Zoroastrians, which led many to convert or leave, like the Parsis who went to India.
A common pattern, unfortunately. Now, alongside Zoroastrianism, you mentioned Mithraism, another ancient Iranian faith.
Yes, Mithraism comes up frequently. Some sources suggest it was particularly strong in certain areas or among specific groups like the Guran or Harami. It might even be older than Zoroastrianism in some parts of Kurdistan.
And it was a cult of the sun.
It's often how it's described. It focused on venerating Mithra, a deity linked to contracts, truth, light, cosmic order.
So how did it relate to Zoroastrianism? Were they rivals? Did they coexist?
It's complex. They share Iranian roots, both revere light and fire to some extent, but they were distinct. Mithraism became really popular in the Roman Empire, which bordered Western Kurdistan,
right,
while Zoroastrianism was the Sasanian state religion further east. So you probably had regional differences. Maybe Zoroastrianism was stronger in cities and among the elites, while Mithraic beliefs persisted more in rural, mountainous areas or among certain tribes.
So maybe a bit of both coexistence and maybe some competition.
Probably, and maybe blending too. It was likely a dynamic situation.
And the snake symbol keeps appearing more in Kurdish. You said that might link back to these older traditions.
It's a possibility, yeah. The snake is a potent symbol in Kurdish mythology, and you even see it depicted at the Yazidi holy site, Lalish. It could connect to Mithraic ideas or even older pre-Zoroastrian beliefs about creation, healing, earth deities. It's a very ancient symbol.
Okay, and this brings us to that term you introduced earlier, Yazdanism.
Mm-hmm.
You said it's key to understanding some of the indigenous Kurdish faiths.
Exactly. Yazdanism isn't an ancient term itself. It's a modern scholarly one, particularly associated with Mehrdad Izadi. He uses it to group together what he sees as related indigenous monotheistic faiths from the Zagros Mountains, primarily Yazidism and Yarsinism, sometimes Alevism too.
And the core idea is they share common roots.
Yes. The idea is they share fundamental beliefs like reincarnation, cyclical views of the world, and might draw from a common, very ancient religious source in the Zagros, a source that maybe also influenced Mithraism and Zoroastrianism later on.
So like a shared ancestor religion for these specific Zagros faiths.
Precisely. It's a framework helps us understand the overlaps and shared heritage between these faiths that are distinct today but seem connected way back. It suggests they branched off from a common pre-Islamic religious base.
Okay, that's a helpful concept. Let's dive into those indigenous faiths then, starting with Yazidism. It sounds incredibly unique.
It really is. Yazidism is distinctive, deeply rooted in the Zagros. And its origins, well, that's a major point of discussion.
How so?
Many Yazidis themselves believe their faith is incredibly ancient, with Iranian or even Indo-Iranian roots predating Zoroastrianism. Some even consider it the oldest monotheism. And you can definitely see links to ancient Iranian concepts.
But then there's Sheikh Adi ibn Musafir in the 12th century.
Yeah.
How does he fit in? He sounds crucial.
He is absolutely pivotal. This is where it gets fascinating. While you have these claims of ancient roots, historical scholarship really highlights Sheikh Adi. He was a Sufi mystic, settled in Lalish, founded the Adawiyya Sufi order there among local Kurds. And the widely held view is that he synthesized the local beliefs. He found maybe a mix of Zoroastrian remnants, Manichaean ideas, other ancient elements with his own Sufi teachings. And his tomb in Lalish became the central Yazidi shrine.
So it's not necessarily ancient origins versus a 12th century creation. It could be both.
That seems the most likely scenario. He probably didn't invent it wholesale, but reorganized, structured, maybe reformed the pre-existing beliefs, integrating Sufi language and concepts.
Which explains maybe some of the Sufi terminology, but the very non-Islamic core beliefs.
Exactly. And for the Yazidi community, emphasizing those ancient roots is incredibly important for their identity, especially given their history of persecution as heretics. It grounds them in the land, gives them that deep continuity. Scholars, meanwhile, often focus on Sheikh Adi because that's where the documented history becomes clearer.
And the oral nature of the early tradition makes it hard to pin down precisely.
Definitely adds to the complexity.
Even the name Yazidi is controversial, isn't it?
Hugely. For a long time, Western scholars linked it to the Umayyad Caliph Yazid I, which Yazidis themselves strongly reject because of his negative image in much of Islamic history.
So where do they say it comes from?
They offer alternatives,
yeah.
Maybe from old Iranian Yazata, meaning a divine being or angel, or from Kurdish Ezda, God created me, which leads to how they often call themselves Emilite Ezdain, the Ezdai nation. Sometimes it's also called Sharfadin.
Okay. And the core beliefs, what's central?
Fundamentally, they believe in one supreme god, Exwidi, Ezdan, various names. But the really distinctive part is the belief in seven holy beings or angels, the Heptad.
And the most important one is?
Tawisi Melek, the peacock angel. He's seen as the chief of the angels, the active ruler and caretaker of the world on God's behalf. Yazidis often call themselves the nation of Tawisi Melek.
The peacock angel. That leads to the devil worshiper misconception, doesn't it? Can you clear that up?
Yes, this is vital. That label is completely wrong and deeply offensive. Their understanding is complex. They believe Tawisi Melek was tested by God, refused to bow at Adam out of supreme loyalty only to God, fell from grace, but then repented and was reconciled.
So not a figure of ultimate evil?
Not at all. For Yazidis, God is purely good. Evil comes from human choices and actions, not from some cosmic opponent to God. Tawisi Melek is God's primary agent. They also believe strongly in the transmigration of souls, reincarnation, and nature, fire, water, air, earth is sacred.
What about their practices? What stands out?
Lalish, their holy valley, is paramount. Pilgrimage there is key. They have sacred hymns, the kules passed down orally. There's a hereditary caste system, sheikhs, pirs, murids, and strict endogamy, marrying within your caste and within the faith.
Any other distinct rituals?
Praying facing the sun, periodic fasts, a form of baptism, these ceremonial bronze or iron peacock effigies called sanjaks that are circulated, and quite a few specific taboos, things you shouldn't eat, avoiding the color blue, not saying the word shaitan or similar sounds, and Kurmanji Kurdish is their main religious language.
It's such a rich, unique tapestry. And you mentioned syncretism again. How is Yazidism an example of that?
It's a prime example. Over centuries, you see elements potentially from ancient Iranian faiths, maybe Zoroastrianism or Mithraism, definitely Islamic Sufism via Sheikh Adi, maybe traces from Nestorian Christianity like baptism, maybe Judaism, possibly even Manichaeism or older Gnostic ideas.
It remains distinct.
Absolutely. Despite borrowing, especially Sufi terms, the core mythology, cosmology, many rituals, festivals, they remain uniquely Yazidi, very non-Islamic in character. It shows how they actively adapted and shaped their own identity over time.
Okay, let's move to Yarsinism now, also called Ali Haq or Kakai, another indigenous Kurdish faith.
Yes, primarily found among Kurds in western Iran and parts of Iraqi Kurdistan. And it's generally considered another branch of that Yazdani family of faiths we discussed.
What are its key ideas?
It's quite esoteric, focuses on an inner mystical path. A really central belief is theophany, the divine essence manifesting in a series of human avatars throughout history.
Like divine incarnation.
Exactly. Key virtues are truthfulness, purity, selflessness. Like Yazidis, they believe in transmigration of souls. Their knowledge and rituals are often kept quite guarded, mainly for initiates. And music is vital, especially the timbre, the lute, along with mystical poetry in their ceremonies, the jam.
And its origins. Similar links to the ancient past.
Yeah, it shares features with Yazidism and Alevism, again pointing towards that common ancient Western Iranic religious background, maybe with older Indo-Iranian Rus, likely predating Orthodox Zoroastrianism. Even if their written texts are later, maybe 11th, 12th century, the oral tradition suggests much older origins.
And the language connection.
Historically, the Guarani or Harami dialects of Kurdish have been the sacred languages for their main texts. And yes, they're consistently seen as one of these Kurdo-syncretic communities.
So again, Yazdanism seems like a useful way to frame these related faiths.
I think so. It helps understand Yazidism, Yarsinism, maybe Elevism, as sharing this ancient Zagros heritage, common threads like reincarnation, cyclical time, divine emanations or avatars, likely evolving from a shared pre-Islamic religious base distinct from mainstream Zoroastrianism.
Okay, beyond the Iranian and indigenous faiths, what about the Abrahamic ones? Christianity was there before Islam too, right?
Oh, yes, significantly. Christianity had a well-established presence in parts of Kurdistan before the 7th century. Some sources even claim that in areas closer to the Byzantine Empire, many people, including those who'd later be Kurds, were Christian. Though, it's complex.
How so? Was it always voluntary?
Not necessarily. Sources suggest that in some Byzantine-influenced areas, there were periods where Christianity was promoted quite forcefully, maybe even involving coercion.
But was it a specifically Kurdish Christianity or other groups?
That's the crucial distinction. While some individuals or groups who later identified as Kurdish might have converted, a lot of the Christian presence seems to have been distinct ethno-religious groups living alongside Kurds, Armenians, and especially Assyrians belonging to the Church of the East, the Nestorians.
So separate communities mostly?
Largely, yes. Though there was interaction, cultural exchange, maybe some assimilation over time. But mostly, they maintained distinct identities. Still, Christianity was part of the religious mix Islam encountered, and you see possible influences, like maybe Yazidi baptism rituals having some Christian echo.
Okay, and Judaism, also present before Islam.
Definitely. Jewish communities have a very long history in Kurdistan, centuries before Islam. The most famous example is the Kingdom of Adiyabene, parts of modern Iraqi Kurdistan, whose rulers actually converted to Judaism back in the first century CE.
Wow, that early.
Yes. It shows Jewish presence and influence at high levels even then. Details about Jewish life among the broader population are a bit sparse for the pre-Islamic era, but their existence absolutely added to the region's religious plurality. And like Christianity, maybe some influence on Yazidi syncretism, perhaps some narrative parallels and legends.
You also mentioned Manichaeism briefly, founded by Mani.
Right. In the 3rd century CE, within the Sasanian Empire, it was a major world religion for a time, and it had followers in Kurdistan. Sources mention Manichaean communities like the Shamsani in northern Iraq.
And it might have influenced Yazidism too.
Possibly. Some suggest it was part of the mix of beliefs Sheikh Adi encountered in Laylish. Its Iranian origins and its dualistic worldview, light versus darkness, might have resonated with similar ideas already present.
So many organized religions. What about older, local, maybe pagan beliefs? Did those survive underneath?
Almost certainly. Beneath these big systems, you likely had layers of much older localized traditions. Maybe polytheistic, maybe animistic. Some texts mention regional polytheisms. You could even speculate wildly about links to incredibly ancient sites like Göbekli Tepe or beliefs from Sumerians, Hurrians, Hittites, people who were there much earlier.
Maybe practices like revering nature come from that layer.
Very likely. Reverence for the sun, fire, water, earth, sacred mountains, springs that feels very ancient and probably continued within faiths like Yazidism. The Yazidi belief in Zudans, sort of nature spirits or powers, could reflect that.
And the snake symbol again?
Yes. That snake motif, the mar, seen in mythology, folklore, even reliefs at Lilish, that probably taps into very, very old pre-Abrahamic, maybe pre-Zoroastrian layers of meaning about earth, creation, protection.
So it wasn't neat boxes of religion, was it? More like a messy, interactive environment?
Exactly. Think permeable boundaries, interaction, borrowing, blending that was the norm, not rigid separation. Political ties mattered too. Byzantine influence here, Sasanian there. identities could be fluid, especially with things like forced conversions or assimilation happening sometimes.
So defining one pre-Islamic Kurdish religion is impossible. It was a spectrum.
A spectrum, a mosaic, definitely diverse and fluid, much more so than our modern categories sometimes allow for.
Okay, this incredibly rich, diverse landscape is this setting for the arrival of Islam in the 7th century. That must have been a massive shift. How did it begin?
It was absolutely pivotal. The arrival of Arab Muslim armies marks the start of this gradual but ultimately transformative process of Islamization in Kurdistan.
When did they first arrive, and what was the reaction?
The push into the region really starts around 637 CE during the early conquests after victories in Mesopotamia. Many Kurdish tribes at the time were linked to the Sasanian Empire, either subjects or allies, so they initially resisted alongside the Sasanians.
So there was fighting?
Yes. Battles like Jalola in 637 were key Sasanian defeats that opened up Kurdish areas. But the sources paint different pictures of what happened next regarding conversion.
How so?
Well, the period of mass conversion is often linked to Caliph Umar's reign, roughly 634-644 CE, especially as the Sasanian Empire finally collapsed around 639-644. As Sasanian power crumbled, Kurdish tribal leaders started submitting to the new reality, adopting Islam, and their tribes generally followed.
But was it willing conversion or forced? This is where the accounts differ.
Exactly. Some accounts emphasize an early, maybe even enthusiastic acceptance. They might mention early Kurdish converts, even companions of the Prophet Muhammad, suggesting Kurds embraced Islam willingly and played an early role in Islamic civilization. Sometimes this is framed as a shift from Christianity to Islam in some areas.
Okay, that's one version. What's the other?
The other perspective highlights a much longer, more difficult process. Decades of conflict, Kurdish uprisings against the caliphate, sometimes met with brutal suppression. This view emphasizes resistance and coercion rather than just voluntary acceptance.
So which is it?
The reality was almost certainly complex and varied. It probably depended heavily on the region and the specific tribe. Maybe easier, more peaceful conversion in the accessible plains, or among tribes seeing political advantage. Perhaps much longer resistance in remote mountain areas where older faiths could hold out longer.
And these different stories reflect different ways of remembering history.
Absolutely. One fits a narrative of integration into the Islamic world. The other reflects maybe nationalist feelings or the experiences of groups who didn't convert, who faced hardship. It shows how conquests are complex and remembered differently.
So Islam arrives, but the old ways don't just vanish.
Not at all. Islamization took centuries. Pre-Islamic beliefs definitely influenced how Islam was practiced locally, especially within Sufism, which became very important in Kurdistan. And faiths like Yazidism and Yersinism obviously kept huge parts of their pre-Islamic heritage, even while adopting some Islamic elements or vocabulary.
But eventually Islam becomes dominant.
Over the long run, yes. Its dominance led to the decline of Zoroastrianism and other non-Islamic groups in most areas. And you see the establishment of Islamic institutions.
Like schools and mosques.
Right. Madrasas, Islamic schools, were founded, the first known Kurdish one, maybe around the 950s in Hamadan. They taught religion, but also logic, math, sciences. Texts were translated into Kurdish. Mosques were built, like the Manusur Mosque in Ani from 1072.
So a distinct Kurdish Islamic culture develops.
Yes, an intellectual tradition emerges. Early poets writing in Kurdish, later scholars like Abul Feda or al-Dinawari making big contributions. It shows integration into the wider Islamic world, but also a distinct Kurdish element within it.
Okay, let's try to synthesize all this. If you had to characterize that pre-Islamic religious environment in Kurdistan in a nutshell, what are the key takeaways?
The absolute number one takeaway, diversity. It was a mosaic, not a monolith. Multiple distinct belief systems coexisting. Dominated significantly by ancient Iranian religions, Zoroastrianism, Mithraism, reflecting those deep ties to Iranian civilization.
But also unique local faiths.
Exactly. Indigenous faiths like Yazidism and Yarsinism flourishing with their own unique traits, but also those ancient roots and that tendency towards syncretism.
Plus the Abrahamic presence.
Right. Established Christian and Jewish communities were part of the mix, alongside other systems like Manichaeism. And beneath it all, that likely layer of older folk traditions, maybe polytheistic or animistic beliefs.
And it varied geographically.
Hugely. More Christians near Byzantium, Zoroastrianism emphasized under the Sasanians, mountains acting as refuges for different groups, different tribes might favor different beliefs.
And lots of interaction.
Constant interaction. Syncretism was common, borrowing, blending, especially in Yazidism and Yarsinism, integrating all these different strands. It suggests fluidity, mutual influence, even if social boundaries existed.
Was there maybe a shared cultural base underneath it all?
That seems likely. Common threads across faiths, reverence for nature, ideas about cyclical time, maybe dualistic concepts, certain myths probably stemming from that broader Iranian cultural world. This likely helped facilitate syncretism and create a distinct regional religious feel, despite different doctrines.
It paints such a complex picture. So this incredibly rich pre-Islamic heritage didn't just get wiped out by Islam, did it? It left a legacy.
Absolutely not wiped out. It persisted, profoundly shaped Kurdish culture, helped minority communities survive, and it continues to influence Kurdish identity today in really interesting ways.
How so? In culture and folklore?
Definitely. Newroz is the prime example, with the Kawamith liberation, renewal, light versus dark, resistance. It's pure pre-Islamic symbolism woven into modern identity. You probably see echoes in folklore, customs, music, dance, that deep reverence for nature, specific mountains or springs, especially among Yazidis and Yarsanis.
The snake symbol too.
The Mar, yes. That symbolism likely goes way back. And some even suggest subtle influences from Mithraism or Zoroastrianism might have continued within certain Sufi orders later on continuity, even within an Islamic framework.
And beyond cultural echoes, some of the actual non-Islamic faiths survived and are even reviving.
Yes, remarkably. Yazidism and Yarsinism persisted as distinct communities, preserving traditions linked to the pre-Islamic past despite intense persecution. And then there's the modern Zoroastrian revival, especially in Iraqi Kurdistan.
Why is that happening now?
Several reasons, it seems. A desire to connect with an ancestral religion predating Islam. Maybe disillusionment with political Islam or extremist violence like ISIS, a way to assert a distinct Kurdish identity. And the KRG, the Kurdistan Regional Government, has been relatively tolerant, allowing space for it.
So new Zoroastrian groups, even a temple.
Yes, organizations like Zen or Yasna have formed, official recognition in the KRI. The first modern fire temple opened in Sulaymaniyah in 2016. You see Kurdish philosophy websites discussing Zoroaster. It's quite striking.
It sounds like these ancient roots are really relevant today. Issues of identity, tolerance, politics.
They really are. Kurdistan often gets praised for coexistence, maybe partly because Kurds themselves have suffered persecution. The KRG promotes pluralism. But there's also that history of conflict and persecution within Kurdistan, especially against Yazidis. Zoroastrians face challenges, too, and sectarianism among Muslims can also be a factor.
So the relationship between Kurdish nationalism and religion is complicated.
Very. Some secular nationalists might emphasize the pre-Islamic past, seeing it as more authentically Kurdish than Islam. But for many, Islam is deeply part of their Kurdish identity, and you have Kurdish Islamist movements, too.
So the pre-Islamic heritage is actively used, even politicized, today.
Absolutely. The Zoroastrian revival is tied up with nationalism, maybe rejecting perceived foreign influences in Islam. The Yazidi assertion of identity is profoundly shaped by surviving persecution. People invoke ancient ancestors like the Medes or prophets like Zoroaster to build narratives about who they are today, often for political or identity reasons.
So understanding this legacy means looking at both real continuity and how the past is remembered and used now.
Exactly. It's about direct survivals, but also about how that history is interpreted and deployed in response to modern challenges and goals.
This has been just incredibly illuminating, a fantastic deep dive. It's so clear that pre-Islamic Kurdistan wasn't one thing, religiously speaking.
Not at all. That mosaic metaphor really holds up. Diverse, dynamic, multiple belief systems interacting over centuries.
It covered the dominance of Iranian traditions, those unique indigenous faiths like Yazidism and Yarsinism, with their ancient roots and syncretism.
The Abrahamic communities living alongside them, other systems like Manichaeism and that deep layer of older folk beliefs.
And then the complex arrival of Islam, not erasing, but interacting with what was already there.
Right, a gradual process leaving a profound and lasting legacy.
And that legacy, as we've seen, is still playing out in culture, in the survival and revival of faiths, in debates about identity, tolerance, nationalism.
It's a living history in many ways.
It really is. And it makes you think. All those centuries of religious mixing and coexistence, sometimes conflict too, of course. But does that deep history in Kurdistan offer any lessons for how we handle religious diversity elsewhere today? What does it tell us about how resilient cultures and identities can be, even through massive historical changes?
That's a powerful thought to end on. The resilience is certainly remarkable.
Indeed. Well, thank you for guiding us through that incredibly complex and fascinating history. And thank you all for joining us on the Deep Dive.